Well, hello, hello, everybody. It's Dr. K, and you're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. Thanks so much for tuning into our podcast today. Today on the podcast, I'm excited to have Luke Story. And for those of you guys who don't know Luke Story, I just want to introduce him. And he's amazing. I can't believe your podcast has a million downloads. That's so incredible. So he's a
fashion... getting there. I've been grinding away for 2 years now. I'm at 1.5 now, and I'm pushing for 2 by the end of the year. That's my goal.
That's very impressive. You're going to have to teach me your tips and tricks, too.
All right.
So for my followers and listeners that don't know Luke, he's a former celebrity fashion stylist, right? You founded a school of stylists.
And that's correct.
Yes, the CEO of School of Style. And you're one of the best stylists out there, and you styled some of the most prominent people in the fashion and beauty and television world, right?
And this is true.
Yeah, I kind of was interested in you because I'm very interested in alternative medicine, and I really like that you're pushing the boundaries of what we know about human health and, aging process and trying to live your longest, most useful life. So I just wanted to ask you some questions in general about one of the things I'm really interested in is your intermittent fasting. So I thought we could start with you talking about that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I had been doing fasting starting back in the 90s when I first really got into the health stuff. And back then I guess I was an omnivore in the beginning, and then I went vegetarian for 10 years. During the course of the vegetarian years, I was doing a lot of fasting using green juices and things like that. So I would just do low sugar fasts from anywhere from like 7 to 21 days at a time. And I was mostly doing that just for detox purposes. I didn't know what intermittent fasting was, and I definitely was still not eating a high-fat diet, because this is back in late 90s through mid-2000s when fat was still bad for you. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, you know, the powers that be had misled us to think that all of those fake seed oils and inflammatory fats that are made in factories were the same as good quality, you know, fats like coconut oil and ghee. So I wasn't doing intermittent fasting, but that was the first time that I really started not eating food for extended periods of time, other than in my prior life as a drug addict when I fasted for long periods of time because I was on drugs. And if you're on drugs, you don't eat. That's a whole other story entirely. But in terms of what's going on now, I have a sordid past, you know, in case you didn't guess, threw that in there. But that's kind of what really led me into getting into health and wellness and all the stuff that I'm into now, is I was just really toxic when I was young. And so my fasting started with that. Now, when it comes to where I am now, I didn't even know what intermittent fasting was. I just started eating a high-fat diet maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I started drinking bulletproof coffee, and I noticed that when I would drink that butter or ghee and MCT oil coffee, or even just herbal elixirs and things that I would make without coffee, that I wouldn't be hungry until 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then I would eat, you know, a relatively big meal of some veggies, meat, protein, things like that, and maybe even some more fat. And then might have a little snack later on, but I pretty much just started eating one meal a day and not really snacking, and found it relatively easy to eliminate carbs and sugar. And then at some point, I kind of got used to eating that way to the point where I would start snacking a little bit. I think I got acclimated to those fasting periods where maybe I go to sleep at midnight and I wake up at 8 and I only have fat in the morning, and then I don't eat until, you know, 3, 4, 5 o'clock. But then if I kind of snuck in some carbs or some sugar or even fruit or something, then that would kind of knock me off the fast, and I might have some food cravings and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I've not done the intermittent fasting thing scientifically, but it's just become like, I don't count the hours or definitely don't count calories or anything like that. I just now sort of really do my best to limit carbohydrates, all forms of sugar. Yeah. And that would include most fruits. I eat some berries here and there, but I just pretty much, when I can help it, minimize the sugar and the carb intake. And as a result, I'm just eating fat, protein, and vegetables. Mm-hmm. So for today, for example, what is it? It's 5 o'clock. I got up at 9 o'clock, so I was up really late last night. And then I had a bulletproof coffee in the morning, and then I ate lunch about an hour ago, I had a big steak and some broccoli, a grass-fed ribeye and some broccoli, and that'll pretty much be the only meal of the day. I might have a snack later, some avocado or something like that, but then I'll be in a fasted period again until tomorrow morning at probably 10 or 11 a.m. when I drink my first coffee. I meditate before I drink the coffee, so that extends the period even between having fats.
So it's kind of like a caveman diet.
you can kill
your prey, and then you're going to eat some meat, lots of greens along the way. What is the bulletproof coffee for people who don't know? And then what are the fats in the morning that you think are appetizing to eat?
Well, my fats are always the same in the morning. It's going to be grass-fed butter, unsalted, in some sort of tea. It might be, and I'll cover the bulletproof coffee, it might be a golden latte with turmeric and herbs, medicinal mushrooms, something like that. I'll use grass-fed butter and a very specific type of MCT oil, medium chain triglyceride oil, which is called, I use two types that are the same thing. One's Brain Octane from Bulletproof, the company that makes it, and then the other one is called C8, I think, and that's made by Perfect Keto. And essentially, this is a C8 MCT oil. It's caprylic acid, so it's a derivative of coconut oil. But that particular part of the MCT oil is the kind that converts most easily to ketones. And ketones is where you get your energy if you're not getting your energy from glucose, i.e. sugar, carbs, bread, all of that nasty stuff that burns out really quick. So the idea behind Bulletproof Coffee, it was this guy, Dave Asprey, who founded the company Bulletproof, started making this coffee, and he got the idea from going and traveling in, where was it? The Himalayas, I believe, and he saw these people climbing 15,000 feet or whatever, these old people climbing around the mountains with no problem. They were really healthy, and they would drink yak butter tea. And so they'd have this, you know, some sort of tea with this really fatty, hot, you know, mixture. And so he comes back and does the Bulletproof Coffee. So the Bulletproof Coffee recipe is officially Bulletproof beans, which have been tested for mycotoxins, which is the poop of mold, basically. So it's a big problem in the coffee industry and in the chocolate industry. Both of those are very prone to mold. If they're grown in low altitude regions that are really high humidity, and if they're not processed the right way. So I always like to say, though, just as a disclaimer, because a lot of people in the industry have gotten mad at Dave Asprey and said that the mold thing is fake because it's a marketing ploy. I don't personally believe that all coffee has mold. I just know that much of it does, and there's only a few companies that actually test for mold, Bulletproof being one of them. Of course, since he was so successful, a lot of other companies have come out and done testing on their coffee beans, which is great. I wish all coffee was mold-free. We'd be great. But essentially, it's Bulletproof beans that don't have mold in it.
Yeah.
And then it's grass-fed butter, about a tablespoon, and then some of this Brain Octane oil, or a C8 MCT oil. You put that in a high-powered blender like a Vitamix, and you have the most creamy, delicious, high-calorie, healthy-fat drink you could imagine. And it satiates you for hours and hours, and makes it really easy to do intermittent fasting. Like I was intermittent fasting basically before I even knew what that was. You know, I just, everyone around me is like, dude, you never eat. And I go, yeah, I know, that's weird. Eating is so annoying. Like, who has time? I'm trying to crush, you know, I'm working all day. I don't want to stop and eat. So that's Bulletproof
that's
Coffee.
Diet
but
of a surgeon, you know, in case you didn't know, that's the diet of a facial plastic surgeon like me too. All I do is get up, have a coffee, and then I feel like I go the whole day. But
right.
Pumped up with cortisol probably, which is not great.
And then
I do think that you eat cleaner and greener when you are not taking your carbs and glutens.
I mean, the thing is, for me, it's like I'm really prone to getting addicted to sugar and gluten and carbs and those things. So I've you know, used less and less of those types of food over the years, but I'm just coming to a place now where it's kind of just, it's got to be all or nothing, because if I could give myself those cheats, then it's not only the psychological part where, oh, well, I had some bread last week and it's no big deal, it's Wednesday, I'll have it again, I feel okay.
Yeah.
It's that I get these addictive sort of cravings that are almost unstoppable sometimes. So for the past couple weeks, I've been doing really well. I've just really only eaten meat or wild caught fish and fats and vegetables, and even very little vegetables, really mostly meat. And the more that I stay away from those foods that are potentially inflammatory and glucose burning foods, the better I feel. It's just for me, you know. I know people that are vegan and all they eat is freaking fruit and vegetables and they feel great. I just, it doesn't work for my body's like not having that. I'm 6'2", I'm 185 pounds. Like I can't live on kale, you know, it's not happening.
But you're kind of an intense guy. Like I have never met a guy who wants to plunge into an ice bath and just soak in it.
Oh yeah. Like I took an ice bath this morning.
You have to be amazing. A very disciplined person. Cause I personally have tried to like, okay, at the end of my shower, I'm just going to put it on really cold and I just maybe can last 30 seconds and I can't even psychologically want to do that. So what's the secret to your ice baths and why would you put yourself through that?
Oh man, it's not even putting myself through it. Not doing ice baths is putting myself through it, really, for me. You know, it started out for me just as a kid. I lived in Northern California with my mom most of my childhood, but I would travel to Colorado and visit my dad. Uh-huh. And we would always drink spring water that we'd find up in the mountains, and we would jump in the river and jump in lakes. And I was just always into water. My dad would take me to hot springs a lot, and oftentimes at the hot springs there would be a cold plunge. He used to take me to – he lived near Aspen, Colorado, so there was a couple health clubs he belonged to, and they had really great saunas, and then there would be a cold plunge. And I just – I've always loved the contrast of hot and cold water before I even knew it was like hydrotherapy was an actual therapy that's been used throughout history at different times for different things. And then about 22 years ago, I started having back pain, which I unfortunately still have. That's the one thing I haven't been able to solve yet. But I'm getting closer. I feel I'm getting closer to solving the riddle. But it was suggested that I could do hot and cold therapy on my back in the shower. So I started doing, you know, really hot and then switching it to all the way cold and then all the way hot and doing this contrast. And it really helped with the pain. And then eventually I just stopped turning on the hot water. And now I just only take cold showers. It's funny. I was staying in this apartment, which I was going to use as an office, but I stayed over there for a while because I was renting out my place on Airbnb. This is a couple years ago, and we hadn't turned on the gas. And so I moved into this apartment and I took cold showers and I stayed there for a couple weeks. And then one day I was like, you know what? I'm going to treat myself today and have a hot shower. And I turned it on. There was no hot water. And it was so funny because I didn't even need hot water. I don't miss it, you know? So if someone's interested in, and I'll explain what the benefits are, but if someone's interested in acclimating themselves to cryotherapy or ice baths, the trick is doing the hot and cold contrast showers until you can just extend the duration of the cold time, you know? And if you end on cold, it also, I don't know, there's something about it that sets in your mind that you can handle it. And it really is mostly mental. I mean, that's the thing. It's how do women have babies? I mean, it's mind over matter. Yeah. You know, how is that even possible that you live through childbirth? You know, I mean, I can't imagine doing that, but once you're in the moment, I can only assume that your willpower supersedes your physical discomfort and you just deal with it. But unlike childbirth with ice baths, they become really enjoyable because of the benefits, you know. It's really, really good for inflammation.
Yes.
And also just for mood. I mean, it just cranks up your neurotransmitters, your dopamine, your serotonin, and it's just, I don't know, it's like the best antidepressant you could ever imagine. So I get in the ice baths at anywhere from, if the water's moving, you can get it down to about 29 degrees. That's a really good temperature, 29 Fahrenheit, up until about 35. If it gets over 35, it's kind of it's not that impressive. As long as it's under 45, I think it does me some good personally. But even if you can get in some cold water that's under 55 is the threshold of cold thermogenesis. In other words, the therapeutic value of submerging yourself in cold water begins at 55 degrees and below. I just don't find that much benefit if the water's 45, 55, it just feels like bath water because I've been acclimating myself. So I like the really, really cold water and also cryotherapy, you know, and a lot of people tolerate cryotherapy easier because it's fast. It's like 3.5 minutes.
Right.
And you get in, you get blasted with cold air, you get out, you get on with your day. But I find it to be really beneficial.
Do you think cryotherapy is better than the baths in any way? Just because, not everyone has access to a facility that does cryotherapy. Sounds amazing. I've never tried it.
Personally, cryotherapy to me, what I like about it is that it's convenient, but I feel within my body just intuitively that there's much more benefit to cold water. It's a different type of cold. It's not surface cold. It's not like that. The outside of your skin gets cold. I mean, when you're in an ice bath, you get cold to the bone.
Yes.
And all of your organs get frozen up, and it's a much more intense experience. Scientifically, I can't really tell you, which one has what benefit, but if I have the time, because for me, I'll stay in the ice bath about 10 minutes usually. That's the timer that I normally set. So at 10 minutes in 29 degrees water, you're feeling it.
Yeah, I bet. You get frostbite.
But also, you know what? Also, what makes the cold really tolerable as well is doing breath work, and that's this whole thing called the Wim Hof method. Uh-huh. He's someone that discovered the benefits of cold exposure, and then married that with different types of yogic breathing, just really intense breath work, to hyperoxygenate your body and to be able to build up that resilience in your nervous system. So when you get in the cold water after doing the breath work, it's barely noticeable. I mean, it's totally, it's a zillion times easier to get in it after a round of breath work. But the breath work itself, if you do it the right way, is quite a workout. I mean, there's a lot of exertion involved in doing breath work to that degree.
Yeah. For those people who don't know the benefits of cryotherapy, like physiologically, it's nice because the vasculature in your body, when the vessels are contracting, as you age, they lose contractility. So I think it's a great therapy to retain elasticity and contractility of blood vessels. So good for heart disease. If you didn't know that, good for heart disease.
I don't know a lot of stuff. I just follow my intuition. I just do what feels good.
Yeah, so there's a science behind that where, the vessels become calcified and thickened as you age, especially older people. And so one of the reasons is because they just don't contract and relax as frequently. So what better way to get them to shrink down and then expand other than hot and cold therapy, intense cold? And I think that, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of science behind it. That's the whole reason when people go for organ transplants or you're harvesting organs, you're putting organs on ice to really preserve their vascularity and all their, not have breakdown of tissues and stuff.
That's really cool. I didn't even, I didn't actually know that part. So that's awesome. So I look at studies and I find the benefits for things, but then I just sort of compartmentalize that data because it's not necessary. Once I'm convinced that something's good for you, then I just kind of forget about that and I save up mental hard drive space for learning the next thing. And then I learn as much as I need to about that and then sort of discard the unnecessary information. But I also, it's fun to be reminded sometimes when you're in an ice bath and it's a little hard. You're like, okay, why am I doing this again? Oh yeah. Capillaries. Yeah.
Well, one last question. I just was curious what your take is on my specialty or facial aesthetics. Like, you do a lot of body maintenance. I know you're not probably doing any face maintenance. I know you've injected yourself with a poison, right?
Yeah.
But it's probably not Botox. How do you feel about, what people are doing to keep their brow smooth with Botox or facial fillers to improve aging processes, the face atrophy?
Oh my God, I'm such a cheater. I totally did something recently for my skin and I forgot about it. I'm like, I use aloe vera. No, you know what I recently did is I went and got stem cell injections and stem cell and PRP microneedling all over my face.
Awesome. That's a really good one.
I kind of forgot about that because they also did my penis, they did my back, they did my hip, they did my spine. So I got my scalp, I got stem cells just injected everywhere.
Wow.
And I kind of forgot about the face part because...
So you are doing some things.
I totally cheated. I'm just like, oh no, it's just natural, man. I didn't take like before and after pictures, but I went to a place called Docere Clinics in Park City, Utah, and got a whole stem cell treatment. And I had a video crew record the whole thing while I was under anesthesia, and it's on YouTube. If you search Luke Story stem cell, you can watch the surgery yourself in all its bloody gory detail. I've never watched it.
Did they harvest your stem cells, like from your hip, your bone marrow stem
cell? We did bone marrow and fat derived.
Wow, that's pretty intense. So we do in our office platelet-rich plasma, which is from your bloodstream, blood has been down. We take out the platelet-rich layer. We inject that for scalp and face and everything, but it definitely does stimulate collagen and youthful vital cell turnover.
Cool. So yeah. So you're a believer in the PRP for the face, huh?
For sure. Yeah. It's great for under the eyes. It's really great for, rejuvenating fine lines, skin texture changes.
Cool. That's funny. Maybe mine worked. I'm looking kind of in the mirror on my computer monitor. I'm like, I don't have a filter on there, do I?
No, but you look really good. Yeah.
It must have helped. So I have done that as an intervention, just because it was kind of a nice add-on service they offered, because I was going for my back.
Yeah.
Oh, and so they're good. Like, yeah, we can do sexual optimization and do your hip and all these other things. Cool. Yeah. Shoot those things everywhere.
Yeah.
As far as the Botox, you know, it's like, I don't really know that much about that plastic surgery, those type of procedures in general. I've never looked into it, like, oh, what are the health risks? Or is it bad for you? Or anything like that. So it's not something that I've pursued, but I got to say my forehead is wrinkly as hell. And it's one of those things I look in the mirror, look at pictures and I'm like, oh shit, man, those are deep wrinkles. So
mine. So I've been Botoxing since I was like probably 27, 28. And,
really?
I think patients should not be afraid of Botox. It's a purified protein. It helps the muscles that are repetitively contracting, scowling, and wrinkling to just relax. So it's really just a muscle relaxer. And actually, Botox was on the cover of Time magazine as like drug of the year because of so many different uses and finding out things that when we treat the brow and you get a lift, actually patients experience an antidepressant effect because when you physically can't look unhappy, your brain translates that to you are happier.
So oh my God, that's so cool that you said that, because one of my sort of mental health biohacks is if I'm ever feeling a bit down or I have anxiety or if I'm like nervous because I'm going to a meeting somewhere, I'll sit in my car and just laugh my ass off, but like fake laughing, and I'll like smile like a mental patient, just like and just trick myself into being super happy and free and just feeling great.
Yes.
And it's just kind of this weird thing that I started doing years ago, but that now you've given me some scientific validation on that. It's interesting.
Yes, there you go. And then there's so much muscle tension in the body. Like I'm using Botox for migraines. It's like 95% effective. So patients that are like hooked on migraine meds for almost 4 to 6 months, 95% migraine relief. And for TMJ, for this tight muscle clenching, you know, modern society has driven us to clench our jaws and grind our teeth at night. So Botox for TMJ, very successful and effective too. So
you're a full-on biohacking doctor. That's amazing.
I am. I really would love to be a biohacking doctor. And I try push the limits of what these products can do. So I'm doing a lot of off-label treatments. So small sprinkles of Botox to soften like neck bands and, you know, I think there's a lot of science out there. Like they're even using Botox now to relax heart arteries that have vasospasm. When you pop a pill for your angina because your heart muscles are, you know, and your vessels are closing, they can use Botox to help soften that. Yeah.
That's so interesting. So there's nothing, I think the Botox thing, I don't know. I remember just reading things like, oh, you're injecting botulism into your face. And it sounded really scary. So I just kind of was like, oh, I better not do that. But I haven't taken a deep dive. So you think it's obviously you're doing it. You think it's quite safe and
very safe and effective. It's been out there in the community for 20 plus years now. And results are outstanding. And you don't need a lot of Botox to achieve like a really soft, natural look. And I love the fact that you get the migraine relief, you get the lift. I mean, you just kind of, sometimes as we age, the muscles contract and pull down so much that you feel the heaviness and the tension, and it just really lifts. It's very refreshing. So
Come
try it if you're up for it.
Yeah, I might have to come see you. We'll do Botox in a float tank.
Awesome. You would love it. I think you'd really love it. And I'd use a lot of the hyaluronic fillers, which are all natural. Hyaluronic acid is a component of human skin. You have a ton of it when you're younger. You're probably giving yourself a dose of hyaluronic when you do your aloe vera treatments every day. Topically. And when we use those fillers, they just help to prevent, you know, facial changes where you get sagging of the fat pads. And not everybody can do stem cell treatments, which are amazing.
Right.
But the facial fillers are really good and safe. So,
that's cool.
That's part of biohacking too, I think, to think about like maintenance, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, as I get older, and I think it depends on what you do for a living. If I wasn't always doing videos and kind of public speaking and things like that, I would probably care way less what I look like.
Yeah.
But I do have a certain degree of vanity. I'm in Hollywood and I'm creating media and sort of a media personality. So these are things that I think about sometimes. I wouldn't say I obsess on it or I hate myself when I look in the mirror or something like that. But
right.
I am 47 and sometimes I see a picture and I go, oh, who's that old dude? And I'm like, oh shit, that's me. You know? So,
yeah. I mean, your brain wants to stay active and like, hopefully we're the generation that hacks living till we're 120, right?
Right.
But it doesn't help if your vehicle for your brain keeps aging and looking older. So I don't know. Like you said, the brain is very powerful. So your image also gives you some degree of confidence and happiness and makes you feel more youthful. Yeah.
That's cool.
So,
well, thank you for the lesson. It's not that often that someone interviews me and I get to interview them back and learn something. So that's cool.
Yeah. Well, you're just a wealth of information. And I know you've styled some of the most beautiful women in the world, like Kim Kardashian and Kanye and Gwen Stefani. And so you've got clients that are doing all these things. But I love that you're bringing forward all the attention to like biohacking and using technology as we learn more to like really push the limits of what the human body can do for its own self.
Yeah, I mean, that's really my story. Is I was a fashion stylist in Hollywood for 17 years. It's crazy. It's such a long time.
Yeah.
And I was, at the same time, though, I was always into the internal. I'm going to India to learn to meditate and doing all these health practices and, you know, learning about spirituality and all of these different teachings throughout history that are helpful to being happy and fulfilled. But in the day, I was doing something very superficial and, you know, it's an art. There's an art to fashion, of course, which I appreciate and is valid. But at a certain point, which was almost 3 years ago, I decided to retire from being a fashion stylist. And I really wanted to work with people on the inside and you know, get down to a soul level and a physical level and really help people feel better, not just feel better because they have, you know, new Christian Louboutin shoes on. That can make a woman feel good, but like, you know, get them on a fast or get them in an ice bath or, you know, on the right supplementation or on the right diet. And, you know, that makes a more profound change, or just teaching someone how to meditate or do breath work and things like that. I mean, those really can be game changer life adaptation. So that's my true passion. And now that's what I'm doing instead of throwing cute clothes on people.
That's so true. But the human nature is so interesting because, you know, it matters. If you have a good hair day, you feel good about yourself, right?
It like, does.
It really does affect your outlook and your appearance matters. And beauty is so ephemeral. And I totally agree with you. I am in charge of like making beautiful faces and helping models and regular women. Everybody look their best. It's a lot of responsibility to take care of someone's beauty. But I also don't want people to be so driven by what they look like. And I really respect that change that you had in your career going from the external to the internal, because beauty is so ephemeral and passing, right? So it's just very philosophical and interesting. But I do really think that there's something so important about appreciating beauty in its human form. So that's like my goal with my daily work.
And, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. That's great. I appreciate that for sure. And you're right, there is kind of a feedback loop where it goes both ways, because I still own this fashion school called School of Style, and so it's a trade school and an art school where we teach people how to do what I used to do for a living, and we do talk about the psychology of fashion too, because there is the other side of it is you might be feeling really great about yourself, have self-esteem, and you feel fit and in shape, you have energy, you have a positive attitude, but if you leave the house, actually it's funny, right before our interview here, I was just wearing like t-shirts and my old shorts and had been at the gym. Sorry, my dog's feeling her oats today. I'd just been at the gym and I thought, well, we're on Skype. I mean, who's going to know that I have like shorts on? And I thought, no. And so I went on, I put like my favorite jeans on and a really nice expensive t-shirt that I love. And yeah. It's not, you know, no one's probably going to notice on your podcast, but I just feel differently.
Yes.
And I always explain this to guys when they say, oh God, why would I go spend $2,000 on a suit when I could spend $400 on a cheap suit? I go, cause you'll feel it.
Yeah.
You feel different when you walk in a meeting and you don't look your best. I mean, there is a psychological effect to having nice clothing and, you know, being well-groomed and bathed mm-hmm. and, you know, have your hair done and all that. There definitely is something to it, but that can't be, for me at least, where my self-worth is derived from. Like, I can't feel good about myself when I have an expensive t-shirt on and feel like crap about myself when I have a cheap one on.
Mm-hmm.
But if I feel good about myself and then I add a nice expensive t-shirt that I love that inspires me, then it's double bonus. You know what I mean? It's a matter of really, I think, understanding the psychology behind it and using it with an awareness rather than allowing that materialism to use you.
Yes, to start from within and have your internal
confidence
and like treat the insides right so you get that outer glow and you're not so reliant on clothing and everything else. The human brain is funny.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. It's been really fun chatting with you, and I would really love to invite you to Pasadena one day.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, I do get out there every couple weeks or so to go to a float, so I'm holding myself to paying you a visit. And honestly, if you want to go do a float, you can come. It's amazing.
I want to do a float, and I want to do a little Botox for you and a PRP treatment. Or if you've never tried a peel, that might be fun, too.
I'm scared. A peel sounds scary. Like, oh God, do you peel skin off?
No, it sounds scary, but the new technology peels just make you glow. I mean, you're pretty glowy, but yeah, it would be educational for you.
Okay, cool. That sounds great.
In the spirit of education.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks for having me on your show, Dr. K.
My pleasure. And Luke, where can our followers and listeners find you on your podcast and your Instagram?
Well, I alluded to my podcast earlier. It's called The Life Stylist. Three words, The Life Stylist. And I interview spiritual teachers and people in mental health and addiction and people into biohacking and doctors and all sorts of brilliant people. And I've been doing that for 2 years. It's been quite successful. People seem to like what I'm doing over there. And then my website is lukestory.com, STOREY. That's kind of the mothership where all things Luke exist. And then on social media, as we are doing right now, I'm live streaming this particular interview. My social media that I use most is Instagram, and that's at Luke Story, again, STOREY. And on Instagram is where I do the most personal, kind of fun, keeping it real stuff, especially in my stories and live feeds and stuff. I'm very, like, kind of fly on the wall with my camera and just turn it on everywhere where I'm doing something interesting. So people seem to enjoy that a lot over there at Instagram.
Well, perfect. I'll think of you next time I turn on the cold water in the shower.
Yeah. Let me know how it goes.
I sure will. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. You've been listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and celebrity fashion stylist Luke Story. Stay beautiful. We'll see you next time.